The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of 55KRC, the talk station, and iHeart's radio station.
You wanted to see me?
Yes, please, have a seat. So here's the thing. When this company brought you on, we took a chance on you. You didn't have that four-year college degree we typically look for.
Right.
But we gave you a shot anyway. And since then, you've worked incredibly hard and given it your all.
Thanks.
You've been an important asset to the team, but I don't think you can be an intern here anymore. We want to hire you.
You're serious?
Absolutely.
Find your next great employee. Introduce yourself to the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
I won't let you down.
I know.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, news of my adventures, other things, at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me, the Danger Pixie, Melody Lauer.
Hello.
I think this might be a thing that sticks. Did you reserve that Instagram thing?
It's already taken.
Now, Danger Pixie is, or the
yes.
Danger Pixie?
I'll have to look for the. I tried just Danger Pixie, and then I tried Danger Pixie Actual. But I didn't reserve that one because I was like, I don't know if I want that. But I'll try the.
I actually think Actual would be good because that's like a tactical word.
It is. I actually know what that means.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not stupid.
Well, calendar. Yeah. Revenue streams are good. Joe's talking in my ear again. I'm not speaking to my voices in my head.
Well, technically they're in your head because...
Well, technically they're outside of my head and my head is perceiving them.
Technically all voices are in your head.
No, technically they exist outside of your head and then the little cilia in your ears sense the vibrations that...
Yeah.
Hey, guess what?
What's that, John?
This segment brought to you by Lucky Gunner and Federal Premium Ammunition. Whether there was a firefight or you do, in fact, want to worry about that little guy, you need more ammo. And when it's time to restock, you can't beat Federal Premium Ammunition and LuckyGunner.com. With a shipping department that's always moving at 88 miles per hour, if I order a case of American Eagle from Lucky Gunner on a Thursday, it's at my doorstep ready to shoot before the weekend starts. Head to LuckyGunner.com today to check out their in-stock lineup of Federal Premium Ammunition. And remember, unless you're on fire or drowning, you can never have too much ammo. So, we're doing a Facebook user episode? Kind of? Maybe? A little bit?
Can you get the pitch of your voice higher?
Yes!
Nope, that was the same pitch. I think you've reached your high note there.
No!
Same pitch?
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm not warmed up. So if I did like some hot lemon water did some vocal exercises, perhaps.
Na, 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 na.
Right.
I took voice lessons, so.
Yes. Clearly.
What?
Listen, you cats, as Melody Lauer soothes us with her dulcet tones.
No, not quite that way. I have Danger Pixie Actual on Instagram. It is mine. Now I need to add a profile photo, but anyways.
Yeah, we can wait. So, do you want to ask the first question? You want me to? We're doing it a little differently this time. Melody and I are going to
take turns at picking and asking the question.
I do have one. I can ask one first.
Okay.
And actually, this is a good question for you because you have carried a G34. So the question is from Jeff Edgar, who asked, have you seen any... have you seen or are there any benefits to carrying a Glock 34 over, per se, a 17 or a 19? And did you have to reconsider any carry ammo due to the slight increase in velocity from the longer barrel?
I'm going to answer the last part first, and then I will talk about the first part. So 9mm, all reputable, modern self-defense ammo designed around 9mm. Most of it, unless it's designed for a shorter barrel, is designed for a 4-inch gun. So if it's going to work in the 19, because that's what it's designed around. And then the, you know, going up to a G34, you're at 5.34 inches. It's not enough to matter. I've done a lot of testing of Gold Dot and HST and, Critical Duty and Winchester T-Series, and I don't actually recommend T-Series anymore because of quality control issues. But the other ones, they all work really well out of any of those guns. Now, Federal is full disclosure. I am paid money by Federal, so I am slightly biased towards the Federal offerings, but... no, I wouldn't reconsider carry ammo if you're switching between a 34, a 17, and a 19. As far as what are the advantages of a G34, the main one is that I actually like a G34 holster for AIWB carry better than a 17 or 19 length holster. And if I'm going to have a holster for a G34, why not carry the G34? I find shooting at distance is somewhat easier. And I just, in general, like the 34s a lot as far as how they handle and balance and things like that. Right now, since I'm experimenting a lot with red dots, and I've actually been using one pretty exclusively for the last couple of months, the slide I have for that is a G17 slide, so that's what I'm carrying. I might get a G34 slide at some point and switch it out, but we'll see. So, yeah, kind of where I'm at with that. So the next question, and I'm going to ask one. I don't know that I've ever answered or asked a question on the show.
I don't think you have. So you're kind of like, oh, how do I do this?
Yeah.
Now that you've yelled at everyone else for doing it poorly, let's see it done your way, John.
So from Dakota Schaefer, it's easy to get obsessed with chasing certain cool guy goals, say an Instagram fast reload time. Even though a lot of those videos are sped up, and put other skills that may be more valuable within your actual context on the back burner. The inverse is also true as people become complacent in their training. Are there some drills, philosophies, or frameworks that have helped you, Melody Lauer, Danger Pixie Actual, prioritize your goals and keep your skill level in perspective and keep your training balanced as possible, as balanced as possible?
So any drills? See, that's difficult.
That's a really complex question.
It's a very complex question because...
Here, why don't you unpackage this?
Okay. I was going to say, you asked it of me. I think in order to figure out where you need to put your time and energy and effort, you have to be in a position where you are testing what you're doing. So whether that's taking an ECQC or whether that's taking a competition, going to competition, if you're purely looking at where is my skill with a firearm falling down, competition is a fantastic way to find that out. But if you're wanting to know how is my application in the context of self-defense, then you need to start looking at where can I test that? Well, you can test that in places like ECQC with Craig Douglas or establishing a dominance paradigm or force-on-force training. And once you have with reputable instructors, that can't be emphasized enough. So once you have identified your weaknesses, then you pick the drill or the skill or whatever to help you correct that imbalance. So I don't think it's necessarily that there is a drill or skill that keeps you kind of focused and balanced. It's an audit of your skills that keeps you balanced, if that makes sense.
And to add on to that, I really think that whenever you really feel like you've gotten good at something, you should actively seek out a place where you are going to just get knocked into the dirt hard. And here's why I say that. Usually the failure point is different every time.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I think, you know, for lack of a better term, staying thirsty is important. Like finding, you know, not ever settling for good enough, but like always actively be working to better yourself is just an important all around life skill.
Mm-hmm.
And especially inside of the training realm. So
I think that makes sense. I think there are specific skills and tests that you can do, like for instance the fast test, or you can do like the super test or things like that, that do help you kind of identify certain weaknesses within your skills.
Yeah.
But I'm far more interested in how am I actually going to apply these skills if called upon to use them.
Right.
And it's a little bit harder to do, and it takes specialized, not necessarily instruction, but it takes specialized training and environments with specialized people in order to make that a possibility. But if you can get to that, you should.
Yeah. So we got about a minute left in this segment. Do you want to pick a question, and then we'll dive in next
yes.
segment?
Yes. John Hearn, why do people discount dry fire practice?
Well, if you listened to last week's episode, we talked about that quite a bit.
Well, we didn't talk about why they discount it, though.
Maybe. Here.
Let's unpack that after the break.
I don't like that we're using the unpack term so much.
It's hilarious.
I don't think it's funny at all.
It's funny. Never mind. All right.
All right. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977, a legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the new EDC X9, which offers discriminating shooters 1911 match-grade accuracy, superior ergonomics, and concealability with modern service pistol capacity and reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. So, it's a Facebook user episode. Kind of. Mostly.
It is.
So, John Hearn asked, why do people discount dry fire? Dry fire closely resembles actual work without the payoff of a loud sound and a hole in something. And I think people are, you know, oftentimes just in it for the loud sound and hole in something and not actually trying to get better. I don't know, though. What's your thoughts?
Honestly, it's boring. I mean, let's be honest here. It is boring. It is work. And that for people who get into this as a hobby, people don't like that your hobby is supposed to be fun. Your hobby is supposed to be enjoyable. And when your hobby starts to become work, it's no longer a hobby. That's kind of like the whole point of it, right? And I think that even for people who are really serious about this, dry fire just becomes not fun. And at the end of the day, they want to have fun. And there are ways around that. There are ways to try to make it fun. But see, the thing is coupling fun and the knowledge that what we're doing is potentially really dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's what I think is really interesting about this, is there are a lot of people who believe that shooting should never be fun.
Yeah.
Because it is a super serious, and we say it, and I completely agree with it, that every time you handle a gun, you are making life or death decisions. But guess what? Skydiving is fun. And you make life or death decisions when you are packing a parachute, or you are, you know. So there are a lot of sports and things that are really, really fun that are also very dangerous. And it doesn't mean that we discount the dangerous part. It's that we still have to have fun with it. And whether that's creating kind of like a dry fire challenge that kind of interests you, or finding a way to make it entertaining, or trying to, like, for instance, like, I really want to do a 1.5 second reload. Like, let's make that interesting and let's make that fun. Let's find a new way to do it. Let's add some music. I don't care what you have to do. Try and make it entertaining and make it fun. Because I think that, for me particularly, when I get up to do any dry fire work, I'm like, ugh, right, here I go. This is like putting on contact lenses and taking them off over and over again. It's uncomfortable and kind of boring and super not fun.
Yeah. That's a better answer than mine. I got nothing. I don't have. That's really what it comes down to. So here's an interesting question.
Wait, wasn't it my turn?
I thought you asked a John.
Oh,
Hearn.
Did I ask? Yeah. That? Oh, I did. You're right.
Yeah. From Brock Strong, which is the best name ever. And Brock, you better lift a lot of weights and be like massive, because otherwise I am disappointed.
I'm wondering if it's his real name. But anyways, continue.
No, just let me have this.
Okay.
I want to believe that there is a Brock Strong out there for everyone. How much should an instructor shoot during a class?
Just enough.
I hate you so much right now. No, seriously.
No, I think that, so this idea, and I've read lots of information about this idea that there are particular types of learners, like there is an auditory learner and there is a visual learner and this is the blah, 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 and a tactile learner. No, we are global learners. There might be things that you prefer over others, but we are global learners, and watching and then copying is a really important part of that, as well as when we, you know, tell, show, do. That's a really also important part of learning. So I think an instructor who doesn't demonstrate is really short-sighting their students from seeing a vital part of this process of actually learning. And, you know, visual is very, very, very part of a big part of that whole global learning process. And I can understand the idea behind not wanting to bias a student or towards a particular way. But at the same time, Claude Warner said something to me a while ago where it's like, okay, yes, every student does need to come to their own grip, their own stance and all that kind of stuff, but at least give them a place to start. You know, give them a good solid basis through a visual, through a good explanation, and then through a good setup, and then let them tweak it from there. If you don't give them that to begin with, it's going to be a longer process for them. On that same token, don't make it about just stroking your own ego. Show them just enough and then get them doing it as soon as possible. Because I remember once there was an instructor I had, and this was in the hand-to-hand, where he would demo, and then he would demo, and then he would demo, and then he would demo, and he'd talk and talk and talk and talk. And by the time he was done with all of this, we only had like one or two reps before we had to move on to the next thing. And I really felt like it was like, just stop talking and stop showing me and now let me do it, because I'm not going to learn it until I do it.
Right.
So once you have told them how to do it briefly, because honestly, I think that showing and then having them do it is far more important.
Yeah.
So talk about it as briefly as possible. Show them how to do it. So like, if you're going to have them do 6 reps of it, only do 1 or 2 reps. You don't have to do 6 reps.
Right.
You just have to show them how to do it once or twice and then say you're going to do it 6 times.
Yeah.
Show them once, maybe twice, then immediately have them do it. Because then they're going to start to actually be invested in it, because they know that now it's expected of them. Because if they just have to watch you do it over and over and over again, they're going to get bored, or they're just not going to have the time to put the reps in themselves.
I think, too, that I agree with pretty much everything that you've said there. And the one thing that I will say that I think is really important is I want to show what's possible. Like I'm, you know, this is sort of turning into a like demo versus how much shooting, but I wanted like, hey, here's what you can do if you do it correctly. And, you know, I think everyone is capable of that if they're willing to put enough work into it.
I think that's a dangerous, not necessarily a dangerous line to balance on, but the importance of showing a student what, especially a newer one, if you're trying to inspire someone who's been at this for a while, mm-hmm. and you're trying to inspire them to challenge them to go a little bit further, that's great. But when they are new, if you show them, it's kind of like going to driver's ed and then showing someone, you know, doing like a your race car driving or whatever. And they're like, I haven't even been behind the wheel. I don't know which way the gas pedal is necessarily. So showing them a very right now obtainable goal versus like, okay, this is what you can
do. Well, I mean, and you've seen me demo in class and you've seen me mm-hmm. not demo in class. And I am not, you know, I'm not going 100% when I do a demo in class. You know, I'm at 70 or 80%. And yeah, I just think the danger is when instructors start trying to show off to their students, which I have certainly been guilty of in the past. If you know, if someone has said something that I disagree with and feel that a demonstration is appropriate at that moment to, you know, disprove their point. Or at least give them something different to think about. I've done that.
Well, and there are times, like, for instance, myself, if you come across a hostile student who, and unfortunately this doesn't happen very often, but I've had hostile students who told me that a headshot at 25 yards was not possible.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I'm going to do a headshot at 25 yards, and now are you going to listen to me kind of a thing?
Well, I mean, so...
And at some point, it gets to the point where it's like, okay, if you can't demonstrate it and then have them go, okay, you've earned my respect through this, maybe you're not the instructor for that person and it's time to part ways. And that's fine, too, as long as it can be done civilly, of course. But there are ways to use demonstrations to get the respect of your class.
Yeah.
There are ways to use demonstrations to show students kind of like the next steps, and there are demonstrations to just get them learning what they need to learn right now, and being able to differentiate between what's appropriate at the particular time is a skill.
Right,
it's a skill.
I believe it is your turn to ask a question, and then we've got to go to break. So we'll do the same thing we did, where you ask the question and then. Then we'll get into it next segment.
All right. James Anders asked, in the wake of recent mass shootings, there has been much online discussion about what items and gear a person should be carrying in addition to a gun. What is your opinion on things a person should be carrying on their person every day? What are your thoughts on the seemingly ever-increasing number of things required to carry in order to be prepared for a violent encounter?
Oh, I like this one. We'll get into that as soon as we get back. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light on it, and that's where Surefire comes in. From the new 1200-lumen EDC-L2T handheld or 500-lumen EDC-L1T handheld to the 1000-lumen XH35 or 300-lumen XC-1B, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell a Z's light ever again. Now, with more lumens and improved switching, the best just got brighter. Surefire. And as a special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners, you can get 20% off everything at the Surefire.com web store except batteries and suppressors by entering the discount code AZIZLIGHT. AZIZLIGHT. So, before the break, you asked a question from James Anders, which was essentially, what should people carry? And how do you decide, since there's more stuff that should be carried? And I'm going to say something unpopular, but really the only thing you absolutely should be carrying is med gear. And then everything else after that is a personal choice. You know, I'm not going to tell you should carry a gun. Maybe you shouldn't carry a gun. I don't know you. And I don't know your situation. I don't know. I just don't know. You know, I think carrying pepper spray is a really good idea if you're not going to carry a gun. I think carrying a flashlight is really useful. You know, but that's, once again, up to you. Definitely med gear, though, because whether or not you know how to use it, someone there might. And we've seen all sorts of incidents lately where, you know, out in Vegas or, you know, when the Boston bombing happened or all sorts of stuff where everybody's looking for a tourniquet. There's never, ever enough tourniquets when one of these things happens. So carry one of those. It's really, really simple to carry. Filster makes some great, great bits of gear to help you have one on your person. And Filster is spelled P-H-L-S-T-E-R. You can Google it. But you know what? A tourniquet with a windlass, carry that. There's zero reason not to carry one of those. You know, going from there, flashlight, you use that a lot, right? I have a preference towards Surefire since I work with them and have helped out with some of their newer lights. But, you know, let's say you don't like Surefire. There's other companies that make great lights too. You know, once you've got a flashlight, okay, are you interested or concerned about violent attacks? All right. Pepper spray is a really good thing to have on you. It'll get you out of most of the typical ones we see. So once you've made that decision, you know, carry a gun. Well, what gun should you carry? I don't care. Just carry one that works and train with it. And then all the other stuff is extra gravy on top. What do you think?
I agree. I think I've told pretty much everyone I can that, I mean, like, imagine the Boston bombing if that something like that happened and every single person that was there was carrying a tourniquet on them.
Yeah.
Whether they knew how to use them or not. There was a report that as that happened, they were begging for more tourniquets in that particular instance.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's one of those things that, honestly, if every citizen, like, just carried one, these violent incidences that happen, these mass shootings, the bombings and stuff like that would be greatly aided in that, in some kind of medical gear.
Well, there'd be a higher survivability.
Yeah, there would. And there have been people who have bled to death in these scenes because they were not, bleeding control didn't happen. Well, emergency medical services were waiting to go in. They were there on scene. They just couldn't go in because the scene wasn't secured. So that's something that I would definitely say. As to the other...
The TSA guy out at LAX.
Yep, yep.
He died 40 yards away from paramedics that couldn't go in.
Columbine. That same thing happened as well.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly where that person was shot, but anyway, the point being that, yes, medical gear, I would agree. As to everything else, really, it depends on your risk profile. It depends on your risk profile and what you are willing to do about that. You know, I think it's funny when people start talking about, you know, what people should or should not carry. You know, anyone who looked in my purse is like, holy cow, you got everything in here. Because I want to be prepared for as much as I can. And it really depends on your needs. Like, there was a time when I had to carry around diapers and wipes. Because guess what? I had kids that were in diapers. Now all my kids are potty trained. I don't have to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm only saying that as an example of your needs change, as well as your risk profile is constantly changing. Right. And being aware of that and adjusting accordingly. You know, if I'm going hiking or I'm going someplace where it's a possibility that I might be stranded, what are some good things to carry there? Well, some extra water, maybe some protein bars, maybe an emergency blanket just in case, you know. So it really is going to depend on your environment, where you're going, what your risk profile is, and what you're comfortable with and what you're trained for.
Right.
Ultimately. So that's my answer.
Makes sense. Is it my turn to ask a question or your turn?
I think it's your turn.
Oh, man.
Was that mine? Yeah, that was mine, because this is your turn.
I don't like this new...
You started it.
From Ross Hick, as an instructor, how do you balance the seemingly conflicting notions of promoting training to a high level of competency while not creating financial barriers to self-protection?
Of course you asked me that one. That is
I want to answer that one too.
That is difficult because one, especially if you are a naturally helpful person and you want to help people and you want to give them information and you want to be generous, and which I think all of us genuinely in this community really want to do. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I don't think that we as an industry are doing a very good job of showing the masses how much time and money that we have put into our own investment to get us to a point where we are actually qualified to help other people. So it's like we all know doctors, right? Mm-hmm. They have to go through medical school. We all know that the cost for medical school is X amount of dollars. And then if you have a specialty, it's in addition to that. You know that when you go to that specialty or that specialist, you are paying for all of that knowledge and all of that learning and all of that time. And that's the thing, like our time is valuable. That might depend on who, like how valuable their time is. But especially if we're doing this full time, you have to think about this is our livelihood, and right. We're by no means trying to nickel and dime people. And there's no universe wherein we're getting rich in this. But our time is valuable. We've invested thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars.
I figured it out for me. I actually didn't like figuring it out, but
because you were like, "Oh my goodness!"
Yeah, I'm in the six figures.
Oh,
when you consider ammunition, travel, and training, like the money that I have spent on my mm-hmm. personal development as a shooter and instructor, I could have, you know, a master's degree in something.
And that's exactly it. Like if you look at the hours, just the hours alone, and then compare that to any other PhD or graduate or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people need to understand is that
from qualified instructors.
Yes, from qualified instructors. And that's, I think, when you get into something that's so unregulated as the firearms training world, mm-hmm. there isn't a very good projection on the masses as to what they're actually paying for.
Yeah.
And when they can realize the value of what they're getting depending on their instructor, it's a lot easier for them to justify, oh, hey, this is what I'm paying for. This is the equivalent of paying for that specialist.
Yeah.
And if we can get people to start thinking in those terms, maybe they won't think of us as greedy, maybe? I don't know.
Well, so the other thing that a lot of people don't realize either, frankly, it needs to cost money so that people value it.
Very true.
Nobody, you get something for free and it doesn't mean anything to you. And especially for something like this, where I think it's important that you value the instruction you get, not just for, you know, not just if you take it with us, but just from anyone. You know, you need to value it. You need to value the time that I spend, you know, on a weekend. If I spend 16 hours on the range, realistically, that's, you know, 4 days. That's 2 days. That's a day of travel on either side,
mm-hmm.
And 2 days at the range. And that's 4 days that I am not with my family. I am not with my family. I am not, you know, I'm, you know, and that's fine. And I'm not complaining, but like I have, and you as well, you've got three kids and a husband. You know, I've got two kids and a girlfriend, and the thing that you need to understand is that your instructors, yes, they're doing this as a job, but they're also, you know, they're doing this out of a passion for what they're doing and a passion for the community and a passion for helping people. But there needs to be a compensation there too to make it worthwhile, because I mean, I'm sorry, I'm not going to spend time away from my family or time away from home just because.
Mm-hmm.
And people that expect you to, okay, you go work for free.
Well, it was really interesting once. We had a student, or actually she wasn't a student, but she was like, I'm not going to go to a class that's 2 hours away.
Oh, the one
I'm not going to spend that time away from my family. And I'm like,
we're driving 16 hours.
Yeah, I'm spending way more time away from my family. Yeah. So anyway.
And that's fine.
And there's different, I don't want to say different priorities. I'm the instructor.
It's a different perspective is all. And I don't think, some people just don't get it. But anyway, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. So we're doing a Facebook user show thing.
That was quick.
Yeah, we're in the fourth segment.
That was very quick.
Unless I skipped a segment, which is entirely possible. I think Joe would have waved me off, and he hasn't. So.
All right. So I think it's my turn.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Corey Curl? Is there any classes, are there any classes, devoted to gun laws? I think not knowing the law is the biggest mistake gun owners make, which I would agree.
Yes, there are. Andrew Branca teaches a class called The Law of Self-Defense. Masad Ayoub has Mag 20. And those are the two that jump out just immediately. But yes, there are classes out there if you go and look for them.
I would be cautious of classes that are taught, just know who you're, because there's a lot of local classes that people teach, like the law of, you know, Iowa or the law of, you know, wherever. Vet your instructor, because I have had students or heard of students that have gone through, like, for instance, a class that's taught by a cop or a, you know, or just a regular person who, you know, and not that I'm saying that you have to have a law degree to teach the general principles of, you know, self-defense or whatever, but
I think
the information that was given out was, once it's got
I hate to say this, there are tons of amazing local instructors or regional instructors.
Yes.
However, for every amazing local or regional instructor there is, there's probably 10 people that not only shouldn't be teaching, but maybe really even shouldn't be on a range. I'm getting kind of tired of people just pulling things out of their butt. If we do this wrong, somebody dies. This is kind of a big deal. This matters. Please take it seriously.
Well, here's a great example. I taught a class on Sunday, and at the end, I said, you know, hey, are there any other questions? And one of my students said, hey, the last class I was in, the instructor said that I should completely empty my magazine into whoever it was that I was defending myself against. Do you agree or do you not? And I was kind of just like, wait, what? And so I asked him, I was like, okay, so you have how many rounds in your gun? 15. So if the threat stops at 2, what are you going to do?
Stand over the guy?
Yeah. And that, so, just having him think that through was like, well, oh, wow, I realize now that this is not good advice.
Well, you know what's funny about that?
What's that?
There's a pharmacist named Jim Ursuline that's in prison for the rest of his life because he did that.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, emptied a gun into a dude that was on the ground, no longer a threat, and it was straight up murder. And that's
what I'm saying.
Well, and that's like, you know, I recently got into a conversation with somebody offline about something an instructor had done with them. And I'm like, and I'm talking with him about this situation. And I'm like, well, what you're telling me, and you don't know it because you just don't know, and that's not your fault. But like, I'm looking at this going, wow, these people don't know what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and not even like, oh, I disagree with what they're saying. Like, they literally just don't know what they're saying. And I run into that so many times that it's...
Well, and that's why I think teaching students to think through things themselves, like I said, instead of saying that's ridiculous or no, I said, well, let me present you with a scenario and you think through it.
Yeah.
Your attacker, like, you shoot them twice, they're down. What do you want to do now? And having him go through that and think through it himself, he went, oh, wait, I wouldn't want to do that. Okay, you have your answer then.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to say anything about that. And hopefully he takes that lesson and goes further with it. And so being able to be very critically thinking, what I would say is, if you go to any class and you get any kind of, you know, kind of gut feeling like this doesn't sound right, it probably isn't. And you probably need to go and check it. And it might be right, but if you get any kind of like, oh, you know what? That sounds fishy.
Mm-hmm.
Go and check it. Absolutely go and check it.
Now, is it my turn to answer a question now? Or is it your
turn?
No,
it's my turn.
Okay.
Let's see.
I think we have time for one more.
Do we have time for one more?
I believe so.
Joseph Young, at your current skill level, if you were to take a pistol-centric class from anyone who's still actively teaching, who would it be and why?
There's like four or five people just off the top of my head. I really want to get to a class with Bill Blowers. That is probably top of my list right now because his stuff interests me and I want to go take it. He just retired after a very long law enforcement career and he seems very motivated, which I dig. So I'd like to go take a class with him. I really want to go take a class with Matt Jacques. I haven't had a chance to do that yet. Just because I've talked with Matt a couple of times and I've always been interested in what he's had to say. Mike Pannone, I really would like to go take a class from just because I've never really talked with Mike very much. I'm friends with people that are friends with him and speak very highly of him. And the stuff of his I've seen, I've thought was very good. And I'd really just kind of like to get it from the source and sort of go from there. And then I really want to take a class with Jeff Gonzalez. Jeff and I have been friends for years now at this point, and I've not had the opportunity to go take a class from him. And one of the things that impresses me about Jeff is he and I disagree on a lot of stuff, at least when we discuss it amongst ourselves, but we're still friends. And like he's very good at like, oh, I see your point, and vice versa. And then I actually want to go take combative pistol with Tom Gibbons because I've taken a lot of his instructor classes and been working with Tom for a long time. I've never taken just his class that he teaches to people that don't want to be instructors. I'd really like to see how he does that. So that's kind of on the goal for this year too. How about you?
Oh, great. I asked you a question that I don't really have an answer for. I honestly don't know. So I'm trying to decide right now kind of whether or not I want to go more like work on some competition kind of stuff. And whether or not, because, you know, I agree very much with Kathy Jackson where you get to a level where it's like, I think I've got the basics of handling kind of a self-defense shooting thing kind of down. Now everything past here is just raw skill development.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to kind of figure out where I want to go, and then that direction is going to lead me to which instructors that I want to go with, and also who do I want to learn from as far as my teaching style is concerned. That's another thing that I think a lot of people as instructors start to consider, like who do I consider really really good instructors out there that I can learn from their instruction. And their way of instruction more so than the skills that I'm going to learn from them.
Right.
So that's kind of the way I'm thinking. And I don't have any solid answers for that at this particular moment.
Do you like how I just busted out? Like
you did. I was actually kind of impressed. I'm like, wow, he's got a plan. I need a plan. Well, so I need a 5-year plan.
I mean, I always have people that I want to go train with. Like I really want to go take a scope carbine course with Buck Doyle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I really want to go. I want to make a night vision class with, you know, Don and Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I always know, for the most part, what I'd like to
do.
Who
you want to go in.
Yeah. I really want to try and make it to a Masada Ayoub class this year.
I want to do Masada Ayoub. I actually want to go to a Will Petty class. I've never been to one.
Yeah.
I want to go to a Will Petty class.
I've been all up in Will Petty classes.
yeah, you have.
Just like Will's mom.
Oh, boy. Boing. So, I mean, there's a couple that, yeah, I've got, like, on my list, but...
Oh, Chase Jenkins. Chase and I have been friends. I really want to go take his class, because I need to remember to wear clothes I don't want anymore, because I really want to go take his injured shooter class, and it gets, like,
a little skippy.
Yeah, it gets a little Eli Roth up in there, but, yeah. How much longer we got, Joe? About a minute? Hey, here's a really good place to end. Thanks for listening, everybody. Is there anything that we've got to talk about real quick or we're excited about? Or
I don't know. Are you excited about anything?
I'm excited about being done recording shows. I'm not going
to
lie.
I'm trying to think, where are we in time?
This is 3 weeks from now. Oh, we're teaching in Iowa very soon.
Yes.
I'm excited about that.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Make sure you check out our website. I'm so sorry. HolisticRadio.com. Like our Facebook page at Facebook.com/HolisticRadio. And hey, keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. It helps us out. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.